Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 14, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN says its operations in Gaza will grind to a halt in the next 48 hours if no fuel is allowed to enter the enclave.
Fuel is running out for UNRWA and our operations are in serious jeopardy, and that we need to get an urgent shipment of fuel to Gaza.
An Israeli resort town turned shelter for evacuees comes under attack. Internally displaced people live in fear as fighting intensifies in eastern DRC. Gallup said 56% of Liberians feel their standard of living is getting worse as the country votes in runoff election today, Tuesday.
The majority of Liberians feel their standard of living is getting worse. 56%. So obviously many Liberians think things aren't getting better. Conditions have gotten worse.
And Malawi announces measures to cushion the poor from the devaluation of its currency. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, says its operations in Gaza will grind to a halt in the next 48 hours if no fuel is allowed to enter Gaza. This, as Israeli tanks took up positions in front of a Gaza city's main hospital on Monday, according to Reuters. Israel says Hamas fighters are operating beneath the hospital. Also, on Monday, the UN ordered the lowering of its flag to half-mast at UN offices to mourn and honor over 100 UNRWA staff who have been killed in the conflict in the Gaza Strip. UNRWA spokesperson Julia Tuma tells me that her agency desperately needs fuel for humanitarian purposes.
That fuel is running out for UNRWA and our operations are in serious jeopardy, and that we need to get an urgent shipment of fuel to Gaza. We haven't received any fuel for more than 1 month now, since the war started on the 7th of October.
I thought I saw a video of Israeli soldiers carrying cans of fuel. Is that enough?
By far not enough. First of all, I'm not in a position to confirm these reports that you are referring to. What I do know is that Gaza has been stripped of a drop of fuel throughout the past month, and that Gaza, the civilians of Gaza, UNRWA in Gaza, we all need fuel. And a few liters, if this is what's been reported, a few liters are by far not enough for a place that has 2.2 million people in it. A few liters are definitely not enough. There needs to be shipments of fuel. And as a result of the brutal siege that Gaza has been undergoing, fuel has not come into Gaza for more than 1 month.
Juliet, tell me about this lowering of the UN flag, and what's the latest now about the casualty, particularly your staff?
Yes, the United Nations around the world today is in mourning for the killing of 102 UNRWA colleagues who were killed in Gaza. All UNRWA colleagues, our friends, teachers, school principals, one doctor, several engineers, pharmacists, support staff, safety staff. These are the backbone of our work in Gaza. They've all been killed. Many of them were killed with members of their families. One colleague was killed while queuing for bread. He left six children behind. None of them and no other civilian in Gaza should have been killed in this war.
So you are lowering the flag in their honor?
The United Nations around the world, as per the Secretary General's directive, everywhere in the world today, all offices, all duty stations are lowering or have lowered already the UN flag to half-mast. The only place we are not doing that is in the Gaza Strip. This is a show of commitment to the people that we serve, to the very same people who came and asked for shelter, for safety, for protection in UNRWA premises. The flag is not going to be lowered in Gaza, the only place in the world today.
Juliet, back to the issue of the fuel delivery. If I'm not mistaken, I may have heard the Israeli forces saying that sometimes the Hamas people are using the fuel instead of going to the right places.
We are asking for fuel. UNRWA, the largest humanitarian organization in Gaza, is asking for fuel to be used for humanitarian purposes. We will use it for UN-marked cars, for UN-marked trucks, to be able to deliver supplies to people in need. We will use it. UNRWA will use it.
Julia, thank you so much again for bringing us up today. We appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thanks. Bye.
Julia Tuma is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency spokesperson. She was speaking with us from Amman, Jordan. Eilat, the southernmost town in Israel, became one of the main hubs for evacuees from areas under rocket barrages from Gaza since the October 7 attacks. Now, the town has become the target of drone and missile attacks. VOA's Natasha Mosgova reports.
When sirens warn of a rocket attack, residents of Eilat in southern Israel have about 30 seconds to get a shelter. But before a drone crashed into a school last week, there was no siren, just a whirring noise followed by an explosion. 12-year-old Gal Harari says most students had already left the building, with about 40 inside for after-school activities. She recalls the day of the drone attack, saying, "We were preparing in the past few days. We had a lot of drills, so the students knew what to do. We were lucky that nobody got hurt. It was a real miracle." The drone, which Israel Defense Forces say came from Syria, damaged the building. There were no injuries. The Israeli resort city of Eilat was supposed to become a safe shelter for over 60,000 people evacuated from towns and villages in southern Israel that were under rocket attacks from Gaza. Yet this city became the target of ballistic missiles fired by Houthi rebels from Yemen, and also drones launched from Syria. One of those drones crashed into the elementary school building. Gal's mother, Sharon Harari, says she used to tell her daughter the school is the safest place because their family home doesn't have a shelter. Sharon Harari says, "I really thought it was the safest place and that the girls need to go to the routine of studies alongside the war and continue their lives. But unfortunately, it didn't happen because there was no siren and no alert. And if this happened, anything could happen." She says the conflict is taking its toll on the children. Sharon Harari says even when the kid is not physically hurt, he's psychologically hurt. And the kids here of all ages are scared. They don't sleep at night, they're afraid to go to the restroom by themselves, they're not going to play outside. Even though it looks pastoral with the sea and everything, it's all very pretty and we're trying hard, we're scared. Last week, the Israel Defense Forces said its long-range Arrow air defense system intercepted a surface-to-surface missile over the Red Sea, launched toward Eilat. The IDF did not say who was behind the missile, although Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels claimed firing ballistic missiles toward southern Israel. Darin Ray's family is among the survivors of the October 7 attack on kibbutz near Oz by Hamas, a U.S.-designated terror organization. One-fourth of the community of 400 were among the victims. At least 20 people were killed and more than 70 kidnapped. She says Hamas was inside her family's home, but couldn't break into the fortified room where she, her husband, and their three kids were hiding, holding the door for 8 hours. The family evacuated to Eilat, which now is being targeted. For the surviving Near Oz members, it will be years before they can return to their kibbutz if they decide to.
There is a plan that we go together to some place with buildings, that it's very different from our life, just for 2 or 3 years. And in the end, we're supposed to come back to the kibbutz after they will fix everything and make it renew. I don't know if I come back. Actually, I want to say that I don't come back because my kids are very scared. And also my husband, we promised them all of their life, don't be scared. The soldiers is here. They're working as very hard for us, and they will never let something happen.
On October 7th, she says, nobody came. Natasha Mosgovaya, VOA News, Eilat, Israel.
Clashes between M23 rebels and the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo have intensified in recent weeks and are gradually approaching the city of Goma. From their refugee site, internally displaced persons from several villages in the Nyiragongo territory are hearing the detonation of heavy weapons and are often alarmed by bullets fired by self-defense fighters. It is a situation that is putting its strain on the humanitarian organizations intervening on their behalf. Zainab Neti Zaidi reports from Goma.
Hardly a day goes by without bullets ringing out around the Kanyaruchinya camp for internally displaced persons, or loud bangs from heavy weapons being heard from the front lines in Kibumba. Jose Vumilia, recently displaced from Kibati, can take it no longer. She says that since she arrived in the camp, bullets have been flying every day. She says she fled the insecurity and is stunned to see that it continues to this day. International organizations are doing their best to help the displaced despite the worrying security situation around the camp. The country director of the international organization TIA Fund, Popi Angwendia, reveals that they are determined to assist the displaced despite the security situation. She says her organization is involved in water distribution, hygiene and sanitation, and food security. She says that despite the insecurity and fear in the camps, they are determined to save people in emergencies. Civil society in North Kivu province continues to call on the Congolese government all means necessary to rout the M23 rebels and enable thousands of displaced families in the camp around Goma to return to their normal lives. Christian Kalamo is a member of civil society. He says that the authorities are taking good care of the displaced who are not doing well even psychologically. He says that they need to be reassured of a calm environment in which to live before the end of the war. For some time now, sporadic clashes have been reported between groups of young reservists and militia in Nyiragongo territory, jeopardizing the peace of mind of displaced people in various camps around and in the city of Goma. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 14. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Liberians are voting today in a runoff election to decide who runs their country for the next 6 years. Denise Nipson has more from Monrovia.
About 2.4 million registered voters across Liberia are expected to go to the polls today, Tuesday, November 14, to elect either President George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, or former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the Opposition Unity Party, UP, the top two finishers in the country's October 10 first round vote. Neither one obtained the 50 plus one vote in the first round of the election held in October as required by the Constitution of Liberia. In his final press conference over the weekend, Boakai told the nation that defeating Weah would be the end of the problems the country is encountering.
It is the end to lawlessness and industrialized corruption. It is the end to the cheers by mortars, relatives and friends who continue to weep for their children and loved ones who were the victims, disappearances, and mysterious murders. For many parents, it is the end to the drug epidemic.
For his part, Weah vowed during his final campaign rally over the weekend to restore the hope of Liberians if given a second chance.
I want to assure you with renewed enthusiasm, I will dedicate my effort during the second term to accelerating the implementation of existing programs and policies. We will also take on new initiatives that will further justify
the vote of confidence being placed in us by these numerous endorsements.
Voter Emmanuel Begon tells VOA he will cast his ballot to transform the country.
Things are not too far when the city saying, so more people, these are some of the things we're going to see today. We say in our airplane check or whatever, I'm not to be that way. But because of no job, these are things that make us sit in our home and sort of be that.
Another voter, Amanda Gay, is a food seller. She says she will vote for better schooling for her children.
I'm going to vote my Gibi. We are tired of. We need better education for our children because for me, I'm already in my future. So I need better education for my children's future. I need to live a better life in my children.
The chairperson of the National Elections Commission, Devieta Brown-Lasana, told VOA the board is ready for today's vote across the 5,890 polling places.
The commission is very well prepared for the 14th November presidential runoff. I say this to say that we have all the money that was budgeted for the process. Our entire budget was $53 million. So we have received all of that money. We also say we are ready because our ballots arrived in the country last week and they were deployed to the field.
According to the Constitution, the result is expected to be declared within 15 days. But unlike the first round, which requires a 50% plus one to win, the winning candidates in the runoff only need a simple majority to win. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsey in Monrovia, Liberia.
As Liberians vote today, Tuesday, in presidential runoff election, Gallup, the Washington-based survey company, has just released a poll on Liberia. Gallup says the winner of Liberia's runoff election will likely be whomever voters think offers the best chance of combating a multitude of issues, including poverty, corruption, and safety concerns. Zach Backus is the author of the Gallup article on the Liberian elections. He tells me that the results of the poll are based on face-to-face interviews conducted between August 3rd and September 12, 2023, with a random sample of 1,000 adults aged 15 and older living in Monrovia.
Well, I mean, asking people in Liberia, as we do every year, the majority of Liberians feel their standard of living is getting worse. So 56%, which is down a bit from the previous year. So obviously, many Liberians think things aren't getting better. Conditions have gotten worse. A vast majority, 74%, reported not having enough money for food. 60% struggled to afford shelter. But one of the things that really stood out to us was safety. So 32% of people, when we asked them, said they felt safe walking alone at night last year in 2022. So Gallup comes out with a law and order index every year using our full complete data from 2022 around the world. And Liberia actually scored the lowest in the entire world last year.
So you said Liberia ranked among the least secure countries in the world.
Correct.
Now, how did you acquire this information?
So the law and order index assembled by Gallup every year, using data that we collect in nearly every country in the world with the Gallup World Poll. We interview all across the world and try to aim for 140 or so countries each year. And we ask a number of questions. The one that this index is based on is how confident people are in their local police. And on that measure, it was just 45% of Liberians expressed confidence in the police. We ask if they feel safe walking alone at night. 32% said that they did. We also ask if they or any household members have had money or property stolen in the past year. And a majority of Liberians did, 53%, which was one of the highest rates in the world. We also asked if they've been assaulted or mugged in the past year. So looking at these kind of various figures on safety, the index is computed and it's given a number. So out of 100, the worldwide score is 83. But Liberia ranked 49. Was their score. So that is the lowest in the world.
You says a slim majority approve of WEA, but downward trend could spell trouble. What exactly do you mean?
So we ask people, do you approve or disapprove of the way the president of this country, or the leader, depending on different countries we ask it in, is handling his job as president? George WEA scored 54% this year, which is a majority, but that is down from the previous year. So it's 54% this year approved of him, and last year it was 65%.
Before I let you go, what are the implications? What did you find as implication for the survey?
The implication is, Liberia has faced a number of struggles in the past few decades, two civil wars since 1989, the Ebola crisis, COVID. So it looks like people are making a decision on who best to lead them forward. As you saw in the October 10 election, it's very, very tight. I mean, less than 1% between the incumbent and the challenger. So it seems like people want change, but they're not sure which president is going to be the best position to take Liberia going forward. So the country does seem quite divided, but it looks like the main issues they really want to focus on are standard of living and safety.
Zach Bacchus is the author of the Gallup article on the Liberian elections. He was speaking with us from Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Malawi government has announced measures to cushion the poor from the effects of a 44% devaluation of the local currency announced last week. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The Reserve Bank of Malawi announced last week that the devaluation was aimed at aligning the kwacha with the US dollar on the black market. The Malawi currency on the black market sold at more than 1,800 kwacha, the official rate. The devaluation triggered an instant rise in the cost of living following an increase in the basic commodities and services, including fuel and electricity. Minister of Finance Simplex Chichola Banda said during the televised press conference Monday that the devaluation was the only solution to the economic problems facing Malawi because of the shortage of foreign currency.
The time has come for Malawians to make tougher, painful, but important decisions if we are to heal from this economic quagmire. It is doable, it is practical, and we're going to do it.
He said the measures include a $30 monthly allowance to nearly 190,000 households affected by Cyclone Freddy in the country's 80 districts. He also said 105,000 poor households in the cities of Blanta, Lilongwe, Nzuzu, and Zomba will be receiving about $30 per month for 3 months. George Piri is a political analyst and former lecturer of political science at the University of Livingstonia in northern Malawi. He says the measures are too little considering the impact of devaluation on the lives of ordinary people.
Blantyre, Lilongwe, Mzuzu together, we are talking to over 6 million people, and you sample 105,000. You can see the number is insignificant. It is not even making sense because apart from those who were affected by Cyclone Freddy and those in the urban communities, what about the rural people who do not have any means because their businesses are very small?
Chitiola also said the government has addressed that by increasing by 57% the cash given to the poor through its social cash transfer program. The government has also announced that it will soon crack down on illegal dealers on foreign exchange, blamed for causing the misalignment of local currency with the dollar.
If they want to deal away with the dollar vendors in Malawi, the best is to make sure that they flood the banks with the dollars. And if the banks will be flooded with dollars, the black market will die automatically and naturally.
In the meantime, civil service trade unions in Malawi are pushing the government to consider an increase in salaries for the workers. In response, Finance Minister Chichola says the government will soon engage all such unions to review salaries in the public sector and determine how civil servants can be properly cautioned against the devaluation. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
And that's it for this Tuesday, November 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.